creators of the podcast dungeon, you have come across another goddamn horror podcast with Graham Fay, Jonas Barnes, and Ryan Danley.
Welcome, everybody, to a crackly throat episode of another goddamn horror podcast. I'm one of your hosts. I'm Ryan Danley, coming to you from Portland, Oregon. I'm going to do my best today because we have a rad guest with my voice. But do I sound okay, Graham?
You sound fine.
Okay, cool.
It's got a sexiness to it.
Yeah. Finally, I have like a little like, you know, like silky, smoky Rachel Ray to me now. Is that a...
Oh, don't do that. Like, that'll give me intrusive thoughts about you, Ryan.
Glass garden. More,
quote unquote, intrusive. Like you haven't sent them an invitation. No, I literally just got off like the most intense run of stand-up shows I've had in a long time. So I am enjoying. I drove in two snowstorms to tell people at the coast to tell, if you haven't been to the coast of Oregon before, here's what the coast of Oregon is. You see the most beautiful sights. You see beautiful like rock cliffs, crashing ominous waves of a cold coast, and then you see a lot of working class trucks. Like that's like the two things on the Oregon coast is people who cut down trees and drink booze, people who catch fish and drink booze, and but I had a couple great shows at the coast, and but I've also just been doing show after show after show. So
you know why that happens, Ryan? It's because they drive to a place like Newport or Lincoln City and they get one DUI and they're like, well, fuck, I live here now.
Exactly. They sell t-shirts. Those towns are great because they sell just enough t-shirts to balance out the meth. How's things in Flatbush, Graham?
They're pretty good. I spend all day watching kids and then going to Drip, my new favorite coffee place. That's it.
That's wow.
Yeah.
Shout out.
That's all I do is sleep and do that.
Shout out to Drip. Shout out to Drip. You can play.
Huge shout out to Drip and Mitch and Kiki at Drip, actually.
Where is that? Is it Manhattan or Brooklyn?
No, this is like a 15-minute walk from my place. It's exactly half a mile.
Oh, shit. I know exactly where that's at, actually.
It's the fucking dopest. It's the coolest. The food is it's where the Haitian patties came from. I found this place because my wife, Molly, was like, hey, come by this place. They've got Haitian patties. It was a coffee shop. I was like, they don't have food. She was like, no, these patties are good. So we went and they fucking blew my mind. They're not like Jamaican patties. They're Haitian and they're flaky and just incredible. And so now I'm a regular. Now everybody there knows me.
For anybody who doesn't know Graham's wife, him questioning her in the level of smartness above him that she is
poor choice.
hilarious. Yeah. that would be like me going to like, you know, like Einstein or some shit. Like
that would have been like you questioning here. Cornel West.
Yeah.
How's everything going, Jonas? Good. All right, we're gonna go on to our guests.
Okay.
but for real, Jonas, do you have anything cool?
No, Bushwick's great, and shout out to Salute, the restaurant that is three doors down from my apartment, because they fucking rule, and more people should go there.
There you go. We're getting restaurants out of the way. Anyway, I'm so excited today for our guest, because he was in one of our three of our favorite movies last year, and one of before that, The Ranger, and then Brooklyn 45, which we've talked at length about. We love that movie. And recently Black Mold as well, which I fucking loved. Mm-hmm. And I'm very much looking forward to his new movie coming out by Larry Fessenden called Blackout. Everybody, Jeremy Holm.
Hey, man.
How are you?
Nice to be here. I'm great. Here, first of all, I'm excited to learn about this new thing called a Haitian patty.
Yeah.
And there's no way you're going to keep me out of drip the next time I'm in Brooklyn.
Fantastic. Hit me up.
Is it in Williamsburg?
No, no. It's in Flatbush. It's near King's Theater.
Oh, okay. Cool. I can't wait to check that place out.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't even know what a Haitian patty is. What is a Haitian patty?
It's just a flakier, like it's just this like flaky crust and it's just a little bit of meat inside, but it's like unreal. It's hard to explain how amazing they are. Okay. But also everything else on their fucking menu is unbelievable. But anyway.
Road trip.
Yeah. So,
that was a really nice introduction. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, we're huge fans. Once I made the connection watching Brooklyn 45 that you were in The Ranger, which is another movie I absolutely adore. Shout out to Jen Wexler and Heather Buckley and everybody else who worked on that movie. You know, The Ranger is amazing because A, they get punk rock right, because like the punks in it are actually like kind of real punks, and which is rare, you know. And B, you are such an ominous like villain in that movie. Like that had to be just like, and I remember when it came out on Shudder, and that was like right when Shudder was starting to like really like get into like making,
really kicking it in, yeah,
kicking it into like making its own movies. And I remember thinking, if Shudder keeps making movies like this, they are going to make every single actual horror fan very happy. So like, you know, how was it to be like on the beginning stages of something like that? You know what I mean? Like a straight to streaming, well, straight know, to this, horror
this
streaming.
All came about. Yeah. This all came about because I worked with a dude in New York City who went to school with Jen, and his name was Jocko, and Jocko and Jen like had this script, and you know, when they decided they wanted to make it, and they took it to Fantasia to get funding and to meet people. And then they got the funding and they called me up. They said, hey, would you want to, we kind of wrote this part for you. And I ripped through that script and I said, yes. And I kind of didn't know. I just knew I'd be in the woods, and I'm from the mountains of Colorado, so I love that. I'm a staunch, proponent of the national parks. My brother's a range ecologist and a wetland soil expert, and so you know, being in that environment was really exciting to me. And who doesn't want to like make a? It was my first horror movie. Who doesn't want to make one? I had no idea how much fun it would be. And Jen is incredible. The whole team: Ashley Sneed, Chloe Levine, who I got to work a lot with. All the actors in it. It was just a really cool experience. And we were talking out before you pressed record on this, that people who are in the genre world just naturally know how to have a good time. So it was a blast. I didn't know what was going to happen, all the gates that would open, and you know, no one knew what Shudder would become. And I think it's actually in its early, I still think it's got a lot of room to grow. And I'm looking forward to, you know, Sacrifice Games on Shudder now. It's got some great movies. Suitable Flesh, incredible.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
I actually haven't been disappointed in a Shudder release in a long time. Like, I don't think there's anything that's come out. We were big fans of Jennifer Reeder with Perpetrator. We are big fans of, like everything that's come out from them has been amazing. They're getting Satanic Hispanics, apparently. They're picking that up, which is fabulous.
Dan Zimmerman, man, he's got good taste.
Yeah, it's yep. It's like, and it's all like, I think as a horror fan, like, we wanted this, you know, like somebody who got it, because it's real easy to like put together a horror channel and just do the stuff and the old stuff and the stuff like that, but to like find, to take that independent horror angle and to find like creative, like what's going on out there and get their finger on the pulse of that is really just absolutely is awesome. And The Ranger is a great example of like one of those movies. It's a solid, solid movie. Anybody hasn't seen it, hey, stop what you're doing. Go watch it. You play like, so you, your brother's a ranger. You grew up, I grew up in Colorado too. That's crazy. I grew up in I grew up in Conifer. So that's a
Yes. Where'd you go to junior high?
I went to West Jeff for,
I went to West Jeff Elementary, West Jeff Junior High. And then I went to Columbine.
That's insane.
You not.
Yeah. I
graduated way earlier than you.
Yeah, I went to West Jeff Junior. I went to and then we moved and I went to Evergreen Junior and then I went to Evergreen High School. So yeah,
dude, so, that's yeah, so
that's
crazy.
So cool.
And if you guys would see the size of these towns too, especially then. Conifer is bigger now, but like Conifer, like in this era, was like seriously like so. That's really wild.
When you lived there, did you go? Was the hot dog open?
Yes. Oh yeah.
Oh
yeah. Yes. Yes.
On the last day of school, this was a little hot dog stand that was in the shape of a hot dog, but yeah, it was big enough like 6 or 7 people could walk in this place and you could get ice cream and hot dogs. And on the last day of school, our asshole bus driver, Mrs. Wedlin, would take us all and she'd buy us all an ice cream cone on the last day of school every day. It was great. Well, maybe we were wrong about her.
Well, that's so
that's a good move. This because is then they come back after the summer, like, ah, she's fine.
She's fine. Nice by the third day. Yeah,
yeah, that's wild. Andy went to Columbine. Yeah,
that's nuts.
Yeah, I used to work at the Fort, the restaurant.
No way.
Yes, and I was a cook at the
Fort there for 4 years.
Are you kidding me?
What the fuck?
Did you know Sam Arnold? You didn't work with Sam Arnold, did you?
Yeah, I mean, he owned it when I worked there.
You were there when he was alive.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. Listen, he one time took me to the Rattlesnake Club in downtown Denver because he was a member of the club. And, you know, he had that gold Mercedes.
Right.
He was like, Jeremy, you need to get a job in life where you can drive one of these because it's less expensive in the long run.
Wow, that's amazing. Yeah. I was a cook there, and
he wanted me to go to Yale.
Mm.
No, go ahead.
Yeah, and for anybody who doesn't know, the Fort restaurant's like a big like adobe fort that it sells like a buffalo. It's like the largest like restaurant that sells buffalo. It has like Rocky Mountain oysters on the appetizer menu and like rattlesnake and like it's a very popular restaurant. We would do like 400 to 600 covers on a Friday, Saturday night. Yeah,
no, hey, so you know Todd Street.
Yep. Yep. Yes. This is really okay, funny. We could talk about it. Anyways.
You don't need to cut that out. I think it's hilarious that this episode became another goddamn Conifer podcast. Yeah. That's fucking great. Yeah.
That's super cool.
I'm surprised too. You guys didn't even know this shit.
Well, Conifer goes like, so it goes like there's Denver, then there's Golden. And well, there's Denver, there's Lakewood, then there's Golden, and then it starts getting small. Then it goes shoots straight up the mountain, and the first town you hit is Evergreen. And that's where like my parents lived for a long time. And then after that, you get into Conifer, and then in Bailey, and next
then
thing
you get into South Park.
Yeah, then you get yep.
I went to school with Trey Parker and Matt Stone and those guys, and all those people on the cartoon man are real people.
Yeah, no, it's true. We could go. Everybody who watches, from that area who watches South Park, can tell you all of the things. Like all the buses have R1 on the side, which is like a thing. They're at the bottom of Mount Evanston. It's actually Mount Evans. Anyways, we could go on and on for this forever.
I honestly just want to know if Cannibal the Musical is based on real people, which aside from Albert Fish.
I mean Conifer isn't Conifer and Bailey aren't necessarily warm places humanly. Would be my take from it. But Jeremy might have had a different experience. But Anyways, this has been fun. This is great. I'm sure all our global people, go find Conifer on a map and you'll be like, oh wow, you'll realize how absolutely wild it is.
Also, people know that you're from Denver that listen to the show, so like this is a cool little is a cool little thing for them too. They're like, oh fuck, he's been talking about Denver the whole time.
Yeah, I mean, I lived in Denver as a teenager, and I actually graduated from Jefferson County Open School in Lakewood, Colorado. Where are we going to talk? So, because we can just talk about the mid '80s.
So we're talking about how fucking badass that Jeremy was as the villain in The Ranger.
So yeah. did you tap into that Colorado rural thing to get there? Is that
there was this dude? His name was Tom. I'm not gonna say his last name. His name was Tom. And one time that I got home from school and my house was broken into, so I ran down to Tom's house. I'm like, Tom, I think someone's in my house. And Tom was like this. He looked like a movie star. He was really tough, and he was a redneck. Like, I grew up in a poor section of the mountains. We were all rednecks. And he came up there and he got a Bowie knife and a shotgun. And he came up there and he just walked in the house. And a kid was in the house and he chased the kid out of the house. He was listening to the stereo, chased the kid down the way. But I based The Ranger on Tom.
Oh, shit.
Nice. So I, you know, every time I have a character, there's something else. Maybe it's a piece of music. Maybe it's a photo, like an old photo you see in a book. Maybe it's straight up ripping it off of, you know, an amalgam of other people. But this character was pretty much based on Tom, my buddy Tom.
That's because if you grow up in Colorado, there are these people, you know what I mean, that are like this. And, you know, I mean, it's a little sweeter on the East Coast, believe it or not, in the woods than the Colorado thing. But
we got pretty fucked up woods up in upstate New York.
Yeah.
We definitely do. Yeah. We have some pretty wild woods up there.
And now across the lake from that part of New York. And
it's wild up there.
And now
people who can do for themselves, they can do their own surgery on their own, you know, lacerations and whatnot.
And now I'm being, you know, now I'm in the Pacific Northwest, and they're less creepy like that. And they're more like serial killer creepy. It's hard to explain. It's less like redneck creepy, and it's more like the Pacific Northwest. Like Oregon's not as bad as Washington, but in rural Washington, you feel like being a serial killer makes more sense than not being a serial killer. If that makes sense. Yeah, it's the water. So
that's why all those serial killers went up there, and that's why they, I think also, like, when you look into that and you look at the amount of serial killers that were frequenting that area and were burying bodies and shit up there, like, I mean, it kind of makes sense when you go up there. You're like, oh, I see why this was the place. Like, there's lots of places to do it. The ground is not shallow. Like, there's many, many places to do those things. Mm-hmm. And it just shocks me even more that most of them that they all got caught.
So you do The Ranger. So how do you get into acting? Let's back up a little bit. So you go to Columbine. Not a lot of actors coming out of our area, it seems like. And so did you do theater in high school? Did you do those sorts of things? Or
yeah, well, what happened was I lived alone with my mom, and she died when I was 16, and so I wanted to be a spy. I was taking Russian and a lot of math and a lot of science. I wanted to be in the CIA, and I had an interview with an FBI guy, and you know, one of those trade fair things. And he said, take a lot of math, take a lot of science, and take Russian. So I did. Then when my mom died, I was in choir, and I ended up doing a play, and I just fell in love with it, and it kind of saved my life. And so I ended up going to Colorado State, got my degree in theater, and then I lived in London for a year, and then I got my master's in classical acting in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and then I moved to New York and, you know, did a lot of regional theater, and then I started doing soap operas, and then I started doing movies, and then House of Cards came along, and you know, and now we're here.
So
another goddamn
Yeah, yeah. The highlight, there's House of Cards, and then there's,
and then there's us.
Then there's us.
So you said The Ranger was your first horror movie, and that it opened up some doors into specifically horror?
Yeah, and well, I enjoyed doing it, first of all. So that was a thing. And I was doing House of Cards and Mr. Robot kind of at the same time. And then I ended up, you know, getting along so well with Jen and all those people that she introduced me to a whole bunch of other people. And, you know, then I started getting a bunch of, you know, jobs from that. And here we are. I ended up through Andrew Vandenhouten doing a movie called Don't Look Back, which was written by the Final Destination guy. And so, you know, there was a lot of cross fertilization there, and it continues, you know. I did Chloe Short this last summer that she's working on finishing, and I think I met Ted Gagan through Jen and ended up doing Brooklyn 45 because of Jen. And then I got introduced to the producers of Brooklyn 45, who made Black Mold, and I've since made two other movies with them, which aren't out yet.
The Black Island Sound was a great movie, I think.
And that came through the producers of The Ranger. They got to work in with the McManus brothers, and so that's how I got involved with that, which is a great movie. If you haven't seen Black Island Sound, it's a really fun movie.
It's great. How was working on House of Cards? We don't need to get into all the House of Cards drama, but like, I mean, because that's a pretty involved show. It was a pretty big, we were talking about it a little bit earlier. Like, it was like one of the first, like, straight to like a streaming show that was. So that's kind of a big thing to be on. You're a pretty main character on it. I mean, so that had to be a pretty big deal at the time, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't even realize how big. It was going to become the actors on it were incredible. A lot of them New York actors, and the concept itself was like, is this going to work? Will people really subscribe just so they can see a show? Will people really want to binge 10 episodes of a show all at once?
They the fucking did. Year,
yeah. The servers every year, you know, and I'd try to watch it so I could, you know, make comments on what people were talking about if I did an interview or anything, and the servers would always crash every time the time they released them. They would crash. It was a great show to work on. It was incredibly intense. Shout out to Michael Kelly. What a great guy he is, man. He really helped me a lot negotiate the personalities there.
Sure.
Well, I mean, most of them were great, but yeah, there were some big personalities there. Robin's great. She directed a lot of the episodes in the last season. What a great person she is. And the crew, I'm still friends with the crew. I have a little story about the last day of shooting that I shouldn't tell it, but I'm gonna tell it anyway. I had this friend who was a driver. His name was Frank, and Frank, just a great guy. Like, he had a paraplegic son who lived with him, and he took care of his son and his grandchild that lived with him. He's just a great provider, great guy. And he was always like, if you wanted to be quiet, he'd be quiet. If you wanted to talk in the car, he'd talk in the car. And on the last day of shooting, I called the PA and I said, look, can you make sure Frank picks me up from the hotel today? And he was like, don't worry, Frank's already taken care of it. So we drive up, and it's a little sad, and I'm talking with Frank and everything. And then after shooting, we wrap. It's over. Like, they had one day of shooting with Michael and Robin the next day. So we wrap, get in the car, it's like a 25, 30-minute drive from the studio down to downtown Baltimore where the hotel is. And I said, Frank, you don't make this perfect? And he opened up this, because I always sat in the front. I don't sit in the back. He opened up the center console, and he pulled out a beer. I mean, he needed me a beer. And we're driving down the highway and I'm drinking a beer, you know, breaking the law. God, it was great. We got to the hotel and he's like, he opened the console again and he had another beer. He had a beer. We just sat there and drank a beer together. He was off the clock, so it was fun.
Yeah, yeah.
Nice.
It was great. That's a great awesome guy. I still talk to him on Thanksgiving and stuff. What a great guy. So a lot of relationships. And certainly, you know, got my name out there and is a big boon for my career.
Well, I mean, like, and you know, names that have come out of there that have, you know, like, literally every time I'm like, where do I know her from? It's always Kate Mara. Like, I don't know what it is with that. And she's so good and she's in so much. And then, the Michelle Ali is like, I mean, is just, like, that's the first place I was ever introduced to him. And boy, is he really, you know, like, I recently went back and rewatched True Detective season 3. And boy, does he really bring a little extra. I mean, I think he's got an Oscar and shit now, right? Or something like that. So, I mean, it's got to be fun to work in a situation like that. You know what I mean? Where it's like,
I wouldn't say fun.
Yeah, okay.
I would say intense.
Sure.
Because you have to be on point. There's no, you're walking on a tightrope. You want to be excellent, right? You want to be excellent.
Oh, so it's funny because Kevin Spacey seems like such an easygoing guy.
Just, very easy.
I don't think anybody thinks that of that guy. Yeah, that's quite a trial by fire working in that sort of situation. So good for you. And I mean, that's a pretty big role. You did 25 episodes with it, which is a lot. And that's a, you know, it had to be. So when you walk onto the Ranger and shows like that, or the walk onto Brooklyn 45, it's just got to be a whole totally different experience.
Well, yeah, well, A, it's a movie. So sure, in a movie, sure, you're doing, you know, you're there. It's a contained thing. You're staying at the same hotel with everybody. Although Jen kept me separated on purpose from the rest of the cast during that experience. But with Brooklyn 45, we were literally same hotel, on set together all day in the same room. We're all in every scene. So it was like doing a play, which is, you know, one of the great things about being a movie actor is all these friendships that you develop. And you take people with you, you know, like I was just texting with Agnes Albright from Black Mold. And then we did another movie together, which isn't out yet. You take these relationships with you and it's really satisfying to have that shared experience that you drag into your futures together.
We've talked a lot about Brooklyn 45 on this show. It was something we've
still done. One of my favorite movies. I think it just blew me away that it was so good, but it was also like a play. Like it was basically all in one room. It felt very much like a teleplay, and there was something about it, and you could feel it. I'm very interested to hear that you were kept separate from the other actors. I kind of want to go to that, but
not in Brooklyn 45, in The Ranger.
Oh, okay, that makes sense.
In Brooklyn 45, we worked together. In fact, we had this little area called Mini Holding right off set. We had all these nice. We were in an old Sears, was where they take all the pictures for their old catalogs. We were in this old, you know, photo factory, and so they had all of the stuff that Sears sold, like all these old armchairs and couches. They set us a really nice area right off set with these little lamps. We each had our own side table, and we would sit in a circle and just make each other laugh and tell stories and stuff. But we were together, and it was like doing a play. You're with, you know, Anne Ramsey, who comes from the theater world, Larry Fessenden, who's like got a million stories, and you know, now we're pretty good pals, Larry and I. Just treasure that man. And so that experience to me was almost as important as the movie itself, if maybe more important. But I think that experience, you see it, you know, brought on to screen because of our time together, You know?
Well, Ted Gagan is one of my favorite. He did We Are Still Here, which is one of my favorite mm-hmm. ghost stories of all time. And but I think Brooklyn 45, so I was very excited for it. I had no idea. Honestly, I thought it was like about a police precinct just because of the Brooklyn 99 thing.
That actually would make sense.
Yeah, but then when I saw that it was like 45 in Park Slope, which is right across the park from me and stuff, I got even more excited. And I don't think that movie works without your performance. No disrespect to anybody else, but like your performance in that was like mind-blowing. The way you had such charm and confidence, but you could feel that there was something behind that was like tearing you apart from the beginning. And I think that was just amazing. And it's so rare to see something like that pulled off, because there's a lot of characters in a lot of movies where you're like, well, they've got some shady shit going on behind, but they mask it too well or something. I don't know, but you masked it enough. So I don't know. That's my big ass kissing part of the show.
Well, thank you.
But yeah.
I mean, I think,
you know, the thing that people forget is usually you're not shooting in order, right? In this movie, we shot mostly in order. We shot the ending kind of in the middle, but other than that, we shot it in order. So you had the benefit of having that momentum. But the hard part was sometimes you'd go ahead of your projected day in terms of page count, and some days you'd back up. So you always had to have like 12 pages in your head instead of maybe 7 to 10 pages in your head. You needed 12 pages in your head. And you also had to keep track of all the continuity, both emotionally and physically, for those 12 page segments. But you're moving forward every day. So it was a challenge. I'll just say that. It was a challenge.
It looked like a masterclass from everybody involved. Honestly, like, it was stellar.
Honestly, the thing that really stood out to me on that is, like, I want to mention this because I know, Ryan, you have something to say too. I just wanted to mention this really quick. The thing that really stood out to me on Brooklyn 45, like, I love everybody involved with that film, but the chemistry that you and Ezra had was incredible. Like, and it's weird because sometimes you watch a movie and you have two people that are supposed to like act off of each other, you know, going back and forth and everything like that. And sometimes like the chemistry you can tell is there, but like you can also tell that it's kind of like manufactured chemistry. Like, you guys felt organic as fuck. Like, everything about it felt very natural. Was that something that came out?
Well, like, it's pretty easy to believe. It's pretty easy to believe that guy. And I got to tell you, he is such a pro man. He's so prepared. He had every gesture worked out. But he was still open. He was still free. And it was pretty easy to be with him and be there. You know, if you're with someone that's not believable, you have to work a little harder. So if I was good, a big part of it's because of Ezra.
I think, you know, that was actually going to be my comment, was the relationship between you and him. And as a writer, I really liked you and Ezra's relationship. And for anybody who doesn't know, it's Ezra Bussington. Go back like 4 episodes. He was a recent guest on the show and great. You are sort of a, for lack of a better term, a yin and yang in it. Like, you are definitely like more, like, you know, he's this kind of hardened sort of person, and you are more like flamboyant, and you got the like the colorful clothing and like the and like I think the playing off of each other on that was like so good. And as coming from a writer perspective, to give like the cast like that spectrum to work with was really a stroke of genius, and you all owned it. And the thing that I said to Ezra that I need to say to you is that a lot of times in period pieces, the thing that I find hard hard is believing that the people, I think we look different now than we used to look. And so sometimes there's this time, like period pieces, like with modern looking people can be a little like, it just takes you out of it. And it is what it is. It's fine. You and him specifically, and everybody else did a fantastic job. This isn't shade on anybody else, because I love, but you and him specifically looked like people, like you were, like you felt the role so much that you looked like people from that era. Like you look like pictures from like my grandparents' photo albums, like, you know. And that is
Ramsey too, I think.
Yeah, I mean, really, but like the whole thing was done really well like that. And that's like a level of acting, and you can just tell like that the reason I fell in love with the movie so much is because it's a great story. B, it's like simple, it's like kind of a fun, it's kind of like a play, it's like a single job, but also like everybody gave 100,000% to it, which just made you leave there like with the gravity it takes to pull off something like that. So yeah, I don't know where
I think that for me it was the mustache. And yeah. I had a pretty serious discussion with Ted. I'm like, I was reading this book. There was a woman who wrote letters to servicemen, lots of servicemen. And she saved all the letters that got written back to her. And some of the sailors and soldiers saved her letters, and she got them back at the end of the war. And so I read that book, that collection of letters. It's very interesting. And so some of the dialogue, you know, we adjusted using specific words. So the words help, right? And you're right, people behave differently. They looked a little different. Mostly they were thin because people were starving, you know. There wasn't excess back then like there is now. And the other thing is just the style. So, you know, it is a collaborative art form, but I really think Ted's writing and the having those images and the voices of those letters in my head are what helped me be in Archie's space the most. Yeah.
I love it. And I love the process for that. And I think that's, you know, you get like I love a big budget horror movie as much as anybody. I can do it, but I think there's like right now there's so much dedication and art going into like independent movies, particularly horror, and like you see it in something like this. Like you're like reading, like you aren't just showing up and reading your lines like horror maybe was in the times. You're like, no, this is real, and I'm gonna go give it a 10,000% and, you know, really get myself into a character and really get myself into a thing. And it's, you know, and it's like, and then you get this like product at the end that it's just like I mean I don't know anybody who's seen it who didn't love it. You know what I mean? Like,
oh, good. That's nice to hear.
Yep. I mean, I'm sure the reviews are what they are, because that's just the nature of the animal at this point, for whatever critics. Reason. Critics.
Well, it's got like I think it's over 90 on Rotten Tomatoes. So
it legitimately like it. Yeah. It's got a good rating on it.
I mean, honestly, like, I don't know what there would be to not like about that movie. You know, it's just like, it's just a good, solid horror movie. And it is well acted. It's a great story. And yeah, it's exactly kind of like halfway through it, I'm like, God, I just didn't even know I needed this movie. You know what I mean? I wasn't
aching for like a weird period piece shot in one room.
Right. But
about
like,
the war.
But then you're like,
imagine the pitch. Right. Yeah. I'm going to make a movie during COVID. It's a horror movie. Takes place in one room, and I'm going to use mostly actors 50 or over. Sounds like a hit. Huh?
Yeah. It sounds like it. Yeah. Well, and look at, Black Mold, also fantastic movie.
So good.
Yep. And another
one you completely lose yourself into. I didn't know it was you.
You look like the man upstairs' brother.
Yeah, you really do. you really do.
Brother upstairs.
Yeah, I'll take it. But yeah, I didn't even know it was you until like probably 30,
40 minutes in. I was like, wait a second.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you. That's so nice.
Really, yet again, another like kind of simple, like low cast, simple shot, super effective movie that just like takes you like a, it's so unsettling the entire time. It's fantastic. Like you never quite get comfy. I love that, you know. And but also not like, it's not like Gummo or something either, you know what I mean? Like it's not like Speak No Evil uncomfortable. It's like it's still like a fun like resting, like, hey, I can watch this movie and it's good. And and yeah, you are you know, and everything I've seen you in, that's the most like character I've seen you do, you know what I mean? Because that's a heavy role. Did you look up a book of old letters from homeless guys who live in
abandoned buildings? No, believe it or not, I did a King Lear in grad school. Mm-hmm. It was based on Ted Kaczynski. Oh. And so that character is not based on Ted Kaczynski, but is based on an exercise we did using somebody named Dan Bogart, which you guys don't care about, but it's a movement process. And in this play, I had to read a newspaper and use gibberish in the exercise. And when I read the character and how disassociated he was from, or wasn't, from reality, it brought that exercise back to me. So actually, the first day of shooting, I did the exercise. The crew thought I was insane because I was like in the corner with a pile of trash, and I was just like talking to the trash and had this whole little world going with the pieces of trash. And it wasn't fake trash. Like, it was trash in this building. It was shot in at Chanute Air Force Base in Rantoul, Illinois, which is now the home of Flyover Studios, who just got a $1.5 million grant from Jay Pritzker in the state of Illinois, which was announced last week. And I'm so psyched for these people. They're going to make some great movies there at Flyover. But anyway, we shot there at this abandoned Air Force Base. And the space filled in all the crevices that the art didn't have from us. The space filled in the rest. And, you know, the same team that made Brooklyn 45, great design, great shooting. Robert Patrick Stern shot that movie, and it is, you know, every frame he shoots is just beautiful. And his lighting guy, Dave Risner, they're just amazing artists. Can't now, say enough about them.
That ended up on Tubi, right?
Yeah,
which I don't know if you guys have used Tubi at all. They have an incredible book. And I love being able to stream stuff and not pay for it.
Yeah.
Tubi is incredible. Tubi started doing this thing where all these movies I was seeing on the festivals were all of a sudden becoming Tubi originals. I was like, wait, Tubi's movies are good now. I didn't realize that the Tubi originals were actually like bangers of movies. Like,
from an economic standpoint, people can make their money back faster if they go to Tubi. Tubi is gonna Tubi, Freevee, there are a few others, but Tubi is, I think it's actually owned by Fox, but the people running Tubi are very smart, and their book is incredible.
Yeah, really cool stuff. I mean, Tubi at first was just like, you know, stuff, you know what I mean, like a lot of stuff and like a lot of like
they were churning out. It's completely okay to say at the beginning Tubi was the one that was churning out some dog shit.
Yeah,
they're kind of just like, all right, let's see what they're gonna do.
They had great documentaries like Weird Al and the Descendants documentary and stuff. They had some really great documentaries, and they had really great cartoons. Mm-hmm. And then they had some like really underground lost horror movies. And ones I've never heard of, and the ones that your friend made and somehow tricked Tubi into taking.
Right.
Now, like Black Mold, Sorry Charlie, Where the Devil Roams, or what's it called? Where the Devil Roams. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. That's like, I watched a
Dean Martin roast the other day.
Yeah, dude.
Just because.
Yep.
Yeah, there's some, still some weird-ass shit stuff on Tubi, but they've got this great horror angle now where they're picking up all the festival stuff that, like, was fantastic.
Also, a lot of the super low-budget weird shit that you couldn't find before. Like, and this is, like, not even... I'm not even saying this, like, when Tubi was still in, like, their infancy, you know? When it was, like, now. Like, now they have movies that have, like, Camp Blood and Meat Hook Massacre and, like, all these ones that are, like, knockoffs of, like, our favorite franchises. And they have, like, 9 sequels. And you're like, fuck yeah, I'm gonna sit down and watch those. And, like, the entire franchise is made for, like, $500. And you're just like, fine, fuck it, let's go. Like, it's fun to watch stuff on Tubi now.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. I think it's, like, the underground. It's the new Shudder. Is sort of the underground, but Tubi is also part of the new, what I'm going to call the new underground, right? Maybe not big budget, smaller casts, perhaps less polished, but not always. But you can find some really interesting stuff there and not pay $4.99, $6.99, $12.99, whatever. Because we're all tired. We're tired. You know, we'll pay for Netflix, you know, but I don't need Hulu and Prime, and you know, you pay for Amazon Prime and they have commercials,
right?
Yeah. No, I mean, it's serious. Like, and now that they're going to commercials, it makes things like Tubi, like, you're now in the same league as that. And you know, it makes it, I don't know, like
makes Tubi look better.
It does. And I mean, like, they're like, yeah, like, well, now we're free and with the same with the same commercials. Okay, so that works.
And they tell you how long the commercial breaks are.
Yeah.
And there aren't as many commercials.
Right.
There aren't That's as true. Many.
And so. So
I think it's actually really quick. I want to say that it's really funny also, since we're talking about this thing with Amazon and with all those. Amazon had Freevee. Freevee was an Amazon, or they had like their own version of it that was like their Tubi version that had the ads, that had everything like that, and you could get indie films, you could get some cool shit like that, but a lot of people just didn't know it existed. And now they still have that, but then they also have the paid Amazon Prime thing, because they're just like, let's see how long we can fuck these people. Like, just let's see how long it lasts. I don't know. I think the more people catch on to it, the more people are probably going to unsubscribe from Prime and stuff, which, you know what? Send the message to them. So they take that away.
I mean, I don't watch as much stuff on Prime anymore, because it seems like, A, there is less content on Prime. And you know what I mean? Like, it seems like they used to be mostly free. Now it just feels like sort of free. And now Prime mostly just feels like a conduit to the other stations that pay to rent space on there. Anyways, streaming is an interesting thing, and it's an interesting part of this world. And mostly I hope it gets better, but I haven't generally seen that to be the way that it is. So I have not seen Blackout, Herd, or Host, but I do got to say that in 2023, you had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 full-length movies come out.
Yeah, it was a good year. It's too bad there was a strike and it was post-COVID, but yeah, and I'm proud of all those films, you know?
Yeah.
Herd, what, like, I got to work with Mitzi Akaha and Ellen Adair and Corbin Bernstein and all these incredible artists, and my good friend Stephen Pierce, who wrote it, like, I did a play with him, and I did Frost Nixon with him at the St. Louis Playhouse a long time ago, and that's how we knew each other. And then we had a restaurant gig together in New York City. I got him that job, and then he went on, he worked for Saturday Night Live. He's a, like, a master crafts person. And we made this movie, Herd, and I'm really proud of it. It's on Apple. It's on that other thing, that Jeff Bezos thing. it was a big year. And I'm hopeful that this year is going to be another big year. It's the kind of year that doesn't come along. I had several festivals where I had 2 movies. You know, you go to one of your movies one night and another movie the next night. And I said to my manager, I said, probably never happen again, so enjoy it. It was very lucky. It was a very blessed year.
No, and you know, and the movies that I've seen in here are and I am sorry that I haven't caught up on I'm very interested in Host. are so good. So it's like, how do you juggle all of that? And does it get, like, as somebody, as a character actor who clearly puts yourself into your roles heavily, like coming off of Brooklyn 45 and then going into Black Mold and then going, I mean, that's gotta be an interesting mental roller coaster.
Yeah. Well, I have a great wife and I have two great daughters who are understanding. And so they will let me mumble and walk around the house and be gone. You know, I used to do a few soap operas, and that the speed of that, that's like light speed. There's no rehearsal. There's no, it's, you know, 10, 12 pages a day, every day. So you get good at working, right? Producing. And then episodic TV is better acting. I'm sorry, fellow actors who are doing soaps. It's better acting because you have a little more time. The writing is definitely better just because it is. Mm-hmm. And so all that's, you know, kind of a laboratory to get better. And then, you know, doing a lot of theater, you get good at playing a lot of diverse characters and knowing how to have a set of tools so you can take on different personas and movement styles and behaviors and just a big bag of tricks, right? So that's part of it. The other part is just being game to do it, showing up ready to play. You be humble. It's not about your ego. It's about getting the work done and then picking projects that have good, you know, good writing, right? And a team that you trust. So I've been lucky. I was really lucky last year to get a great team of people on every project. I didn't have any, there were no duds last year. Sometimes you have some duds. I didn't have any duds last year. So it was good, man. It was lucky. I don't know if that'll ever happen again. It was great.
That's really awesome. Lucky. Congratulations.
Well, thank you. And somehow they hired me. They all made mistakes. They all made the same mistake in hiring me, but you know, who knows? Maybe they'll be back.
I think pretty much everybody can conclude that, yeah, you're just a terrible, terrible, terrible get. You know,
probably awful to have around.
Yeah. So what are you working on now? Are you at liberty to talk about anything you got coming up? You got
I've got a, believe it or not, I have a Christmas movie coming out. Wow. But it's I would say it's an offbeat Christmas movie. It's a comedy. It's a little darker. So that's going to come out. I can't say where or when yet, but you'll see it. And then I have a really racy comedy coming out called FU Big Pharma.
Nice.
I don't even know if I'm allowed to say the title, but there it is. I get it. Breaking news on your podcast. So that's coming out. Bloom by Chloe Levine. That is in the final stages. I think she's, you know, in the final stage. That Blackout's coming.
I'm so excited for Blackout.
Are you going to come? It's at the IFC next Wednesday and Thursday.
Oh, sure.
I'll be there, and a lot of the cast will be there in Manhattan. So
I'm going to try to get there. Yeah, I work right.
We'll be at the bar around the corner afterwards. Larry owes me a beer.
I might bring my camera to that next week if I can. Snap some photos.
Oh, yeah, do it. Do it. So that's coming out. And then my writing partner and I, Chris Kelly, we have a script that we are in the final stages of developing, called Gray Mountain, which I'm very excited about. It's kind of a father-daughter love story, but that it involves, let's just say, otherworldly historic events from our past and our future.
Awesome. I love that kind of shit.
Yeah.
If you would have grown up, everybody who's listening, if you would have seen like the dirt roads in the small town that that Jeremy and I were denizens of as kids, and to think about like that it's really actually pretty amazing. You are awesome. You are doing amazing projects. You are killing it. I'm honored to have you on the show. I love that we came from the same place, and I love to see what you're doing with that, because it's really incredible. You know, like, all of these movies sound excellent. You are not only excellent in them, but these are like, it's like such a, is it like a renaissance of independent films, of like great independent films coming out? And I mean,
I think that's what we're going to say about this period. Yes.
Yeah.
I think so.
I think it's just like, I'm way more excited I was way more excited to see Sacrifice Game than I was to see any blockbuster in a while. You know what I mean? Like,
For sure.
Yeah, it's so good. Yeah. It's just great. The acting is so good. The story is so good. It's just like, it's got the fun kind of twist. Like, who's the villain? Who's not the, you know what I mean? The whole situation. It's just a great movie, you know, and just made by like folks, you know what I mean? And like good people who love art and are fans. And then folks like yourself who like show up and are like, I'm going to take this so serious that like, I'm going to make these movies that are like, it's just like, I don't know. It's like when punk rock got really great. You know what I mean? Like, it was like, everybody was like, they just did it themselves and we're just going to do it ourselves. And like, and yeah, I'm, you know, and we're
throughout human history, the people who have shown up and said, we're just going to do it ourselves, they're the ones who made stuff.
Right.
Yeah. The Greeks did it. The Romans did it. The Persians did it. The Khans did it. The Chinese did it. You know, the Incas did it. The Toltecs did it. We just have to show up ready to work and make stuff, be creative, not be limited by all these weird rules. And they're weird. The rules we have are weird, man.
Sure.
Like, you right. Respect people and still be creative and make great stuff.
At 1,000%. And, you know, and I mean, it's true though. It's like, I think it's just because when artists make art, it makes it like, yeah, it's, you can't commodify it as much, you know what I mean? I think that's, you know, the unfortunate part, and, you know, not to sound like a college kid or whatever, but like money, like, you know, when you work in a studio and you've just,
hey, someone's trying to get in your dorm room.
Yeah, exactly. It's cool. I put the sock on the door so they know I'm moving. Yeah. but you know, like, it's just like when you go to school and like your main study is like, I'm gonna go work at a business, and it doesn't matter what I sell, and I just end up having to work in the movie business, and we do these things, and it's like, oh well, this is gonna be, rather than just being like, hey, you know what, I love horror movies, and this is what people who like horror movies also want. Yes. Does it hit, does it throw the bigger, as big a net? So you hit the lower end of the 18 to 24s or blah, 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 blah. I don't know. But sometimes, you know, like to me, art is going to be, is just better when people, when that's the choice, like, we're just going to make the shit that we want to make. And that's
quality.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
If you ever read Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance by Alan M. Percy, it talks about quality. People can't say what it is. Students can't say what it is. Teachers can't say what it is. But when they see something of quality, they know that's what it is.
Yep.
I have a quick story. I worked for this dude who owned a bunch of like 250 Pizza Huts, and he sold those and he built this big steakhouse, and I worked for him. And one time, after I was working there for a long time, he pulled me aside and he said, Jeremy, I can tell that you're living on the level of your dreams. And I was like, God, that's such a cool phrase, living on the level of your dreams. And this is a guy who started out by driving around to the back of the Pizza Hut franchises he owned, and he would check the dumpster because he knew that if the people that were running that restaurant kept the dumpster organized, the restaurant would be fine. If they didn't care about the dumpster, the restaurant would have gone to shit. And that's what we're talking about. You take care of the little details, the people, you say hello to people, you thank the craft service person, you learn the sound guy's name, learn how they put on your mic, learn what they do so you can appreciate it. That way, when you're doing what you do, they know you respect them and they respect what you do, and you'll do better work. You have to pay attention to the details.
And ultimately,
wow, that was a rant.
No, it's good.
Perfect.
But don't, I mean, isn't that what we all want though? Is to like go to work and do something cool and be liked and like, you know what I mean? No matter what it is, no matter if it's the guy putting the trash in the dumpster or the guy putting the mic on to the, everybody just wants to come in and just have a good day at work. And if you,
we want to weave meaning into the fabric of our existence.
1000%.
And you know what? It comes through the screen on movies like Brooklyn 45. You know, and what I always go to is You're Next. Like, you could be screaming in terror on the screen. The actors could be in the most distraught and fucked up positions throughout the whole movie, and you can tell that they're having fun and doing it for the love. Like, it just comes through. Like, you can't see it, but you can feel it. And that's fucking why I love indie, because that's, you can't find that in the big ones.
Nope.
Honestly. So
it's been lawyered and massaged and moneyed out of it.
Exactly. You've also you have been sharing company with some of the best in the indie world too. Like, honestly, like Larry Fessenden is like one of the godfathers of like amazing indie cinema. Like, you know, I was looking at your your shirt this whole time because his movie Depraved, yeah, is one of my, so it's kind of funny because like I saw it and I was just like, oh shit, like it immediately obviously brought it up, and I saw that movie at its premiere.
So great
festival that was at IFC, and like the stuff that he talked about when he was talking about that movie and how he made that movie and like the guerrilla shit that he had to do to get that movie made, I'm like, dude, like that's art. Like, that is
I just got my copy.
He shot a scene, but that's so cool. He shot a scene in the biggest museum in the world.
Yeah,
without, like, he stole a scene in there, and it looks like it was, you know, it looks like he was there for weeks.
Well, the dude was in like 2 hours. In full Frankenstein makeup. Like, he fucking, the dude, that was such a funny thing for him to talk about too, because somebody asked him, how'd you do that scene? He goes, oh, we fucking stole it. He was like, he goes, we walked in there, did it, and got the fuck out of there as soon as we could. Like, it was very much, yeah, just stuff like that. And like Heather Buckley and Jen Wexler and fucking just everybody that, like, these people that you've worked with, man, just, you can tell.
I can't wait for you to see Blackout.
Yeah.
And watch, I was going to say, watch all the way through the end, my friend.
Fuck, right.
Love it.
Fantastic. All right, should we do the Sinister Six?
Let's do the Sinister Six.
All right. Six opinion questions. First one, Chucky or Pinhead?
Chucky.
I love it. Is Bigfoot real?
Yes.
Hell yeah. Two for two. That's not a thing.
No.
What movie would you remake?
Lawrence of Arabia.
Wow.
Oh, shit. Oh, all right.
Big. I like it.
I like that a lot.
Make it shorter.
I feel like everybody could benefit from that.
Yeah.
If you could erase one movie from existence, what would it be? And it doesn't have to be horror.
That is a great. I'm going to give a sacrilegious. No, I can't do that.
You can.
I can erase one movie from existence.
It could be because you don't like it. It could be because you want to see the chaos effect. It could be.
I want to get rid of. I don't even remember the name. I want to get rid of the movie about stealing the Constitution from the
National Treasure.
Can we get rid of that movie? Get rid of that movie. I love Snakes on a Plane, but let's get rid of Snakes on a Plane. We don't need that movie.
He's going to run down a few.
Different movie, please. Can I?
I'm waiting for one like this.
That's enough.
I love the, if we could skip over like all of those big, I understand that National Treasure is what gave Nicolas Cage The Room to do.
That movie's so stupid.
I'm certain it was a paycheck that got him into that he could do Mandy.
Can we get rid of most of the Sylvester Stallone movies that he did?
I think that's a
anything
great
idea. Anything he directs or writes, let him do all the other stuff. Yeah. Replace them with another Arnold Schwarzenegger movie.
Yes.
I'm into that.
You know what's funny is people either can't answer this question or you are like you and myself, which are like, oh, I got a
chamber
list.
Loaded.
I'm good with.
Yeah, some people are like, oh, as an artist, I can't take art away from another art, but
fair answer like, too, which is a fair dudes. Answer, but there's definitely some. Yeah.
No, I like that one. All right, number five, Alien or Aliens?
Alien.
Fuck right.
That's obvious. Doesn't everyone answer that?
I think so. Has it? What are you going to say, Ryan?
I'm just going to say I think we actually have gotten. I can go back and forth myself. I love them both separately as two different
for different reasons.
I think the first one is like one of my favorite horror films of all time. Like I put it in with A Thing and Event Horizon and like all these other like really great like sci-fi horror films and stuff like that. I think Aliens is one of the best action movies I've ever watched. It's so fun. It's so, yeah, it's sci-fi, but it's also still just like, I don't know.
Pretty
like
action-y.
The characters are so great. I mean, Vasquez and everything. So, I mean, it's hard to, I like Alien better if you really
when you watch Aliens you already know what the gig is. When you watch Alien, the mystique and the mystery of that monster is so scary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. You
know? Graham, before you ask this last one, can I make a request?
Sure.
I want to request the original last question for the Sinister Six.
Oh, this is my favorite question of the new ones. Okay.
You could do the Sinister Seven.
Let's do the Sinister Seven. Because I also want to know the answer to the original. Okay,
fair. The original one was Midsommar or Hereditary?
Hereditary.
Nice.
Excellent. I'm a Hereditary guy myself, so. Yeah.
Me and Graham are Midsommar, but yeah. I'm always curious about that one because it can definitely go either way.
And he's well versed enough in horror that you know. But here's one of my favorite new ones is and last one, basement or attic?
Yeah.
Such a great question. Well, host, which nobody's seen yet, is basement. But Black Mold, the man upstairs, is kind of attic.
Right.
So I'm going to say landing.
I like it.
Nice. I like it.
Ties in with Gray Mountain.
Perfect.
All right. That was awesome. Fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you. That was fun.
Those are great answers.
Time for recommendations.
Should I just go right into it?
Yeah, go, Graham. What do you got this week?
I got, if you didn't catch it on Sunday, you have to go watch AEW's Revolution pay-per-view. It was one of the best pay-per-views in decades, maybe.
It was.
Unreal. It was Sting's final match. It was great. When Daniel Bryanson, Bryan Danielson. When his match is like the fourth best match on the card, you know you've got one of the best cards of all time. I'm going to go back at just one song this week. The Chauffeur by Duran Duran. It's the best Duran Duran song. And I just started listening to it again. Usually I'll hit that song once or twice a year and just listen to it for a week. And then my last one is the television show. It's the only one that's even close to horror, I guess. Well, The Chauffeur is kind of creepy, but Ghosts, the sitcom Ghosts on CBS or whatever, I think it is, but it doesn't matter. It's streaming. It is hysterical. It's just great. I love it. It was based on a British show, Ghosts, just as good. I love the new one. It's great. So That's it. Jonas?
Yeah, so I'm going to recommend two theater movies. One of them is horror-ish, and the other one is more like thriller comedy. The thriller comedy one is Driveaway Dolls. It was fucking fun. And it's weird that it's getting as shitty reviews as it is. It's not even shitty reviews, but shittier than the Coen brothers usually get. It's actually a really fun movie. And it's got some horror-ish stuff in it. Great acting, good stuff. The other one, Love Lies Bleeding, the A24 movie, the new Kristen Stewart one.
Oh, fucking, yeah.
Whoa. I got to see that. And I'm going to spoil zero things in it. Just go see it. It's dark. It's fun. It's wild. And it does not go in directions that you think it's going to go. The only thing I will tell you this is it's very A24. So, like, it's, I think if you know A24 movies, you know what I'm saying by that. Like, it's fucking weird. It's a weird A24 movie, but it's a really, really good one. So definitely see that. Physical Media. One of the most underrated vampire movies of all time, I think, and you can still get it from Arrow Video. That is The Addiction.
That's such a good one.
Yeah, it's black and white. Lily Taylor's in it. Christopher Walken, and it treats the vampirism like a very much like a drug addiction, and it's a very, very well done movie. And I think it just kind of gets slept on in the general, you know, talk about vampire movies. Directed by Abel Ferrara, fucking fantastic movie. I don't have any music this time. So Ryan, what do you got?
After watching Dark Harvest, which I hell yeah. did last week, I went back and watched, one of my favorite, top five favorite, my favorite vampire movie of all time. One of my maybe top tier, top five, top 10. I don't know. That changes a lot. Horror movies of all time, which is 30 Days of Night. Also made by David Slade, who also did Dark Harvest. And, it's still so good and it's still so watchable and it's still such a good movie. And it's still like my favorite, horror, like it's still like my favorite depiction of vampires there is. Just I just like them. I mean, I like them Eastern European and like monsters. A Blood Red Sky does a good job with it too.
Yeah.
Like that vampire that like I'm an actual
Blade
like,
two.
I'm a, right, exactly. Like I don't mind like high class dirtbag vampires. I kind of like that too. You know what I mean? Sure. Like I like a Interview with a vampire. Cause they dress really nice, but they're really like sleazy. And I kind of like that. Cause it's like a real thing. But I just love 30 Days of Night. Also great, great comic book series. The 30 Days of Night, X-Files, combo, is one of my favorite graphic novels of all time. I've been watching Resident Alien.
God, it's good.
It's so good. And it is they do a little of like so it's Alan Tudyk. Tudyk?
Tudyk.
So, yeah. Tudyk. Is he just not a treasure? Can we just like that he just like he does not get the love that like for the immense,
he's going to now.
Yeah,
he's
mean
going to now.
It's good because he needs to be recognized as this like tremendous actor, because he can do like, I mean, from Tucker and Dale to like to, mm-hmm. I mean, he's in Kickball, he's in like he's in all of these things.
He's like Bill Irwin with his body. He could do anything. His voice is incredible. He's You stole my thunder, because I was going to say that's what we're watching right now as a family. My kids love it.
Yeah, it's good because it does a little of like it touches on a little of like I'm an alien dressed as a human and I'm kind of like studying human. He does a little of that, but the whole show is just very good. It's a kind of a complex tale and
well acted, well written, well acted.
My only complaint, and the only reason I bring it up is because Jeremy is here, is that it is clearly not shot in Colorado. I am sorry. Like it takes place in Colorado, but anybody from Colorado, like,
that tree doesn't grow in Colorado.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Colorado has like two trees. It has pine trees and it has like aspen trees, and that is it. And you don't see the aspen trees.
Scrub oak.
and scrub up, but it's clearly shot in Vancouver, BC. And as somebody who lives in the Pacific Northwest, I'm like, get it right. But it's also great. I'm also on TikTok watching Who the Fuck Did I Marry? It's a 50-part series about a woman who married the most incredible compulsive liar ever, and it's just an amazing story. And the way she tells it's great. Anyways, Jeremy, what do you got?
So if you're ever in Tucson, go to the Congress Hotel and get Huevos Rancheros. It's the best Huevos Rancheros I've ever had anywhere in the world, including the Rio and Fort Collins.
My family lives in Tucson.
Oh God, that Huevos is so good. I mean, it's incredible. Resident Alien. It's so brilliantly written. Right now in our world, we need to laugh, but it's also got some drama in it. The acting's really great. Alan Tudyk is a national treasure. That's incredible. Sacrifice Game, Jen Wexler's new movie. Check it out. I also think Suitable Flesh, Joel Lynch. Check that out. Amazing movie. You will not be disappointed. And then I'm gonna shout out another podcast, the Lunatics Radio Hour podcast, where they read scary stories. They analyze horror tropes from a more intellectual point of view. What an education that is, man.
Nice.
Really incredible. I'm a big fan of that. I think that rounds out right now my recommendations.
Love it.
Oh, Blackout. Go see Blackout. Go see Black Mold. Check out Brooklyn 45. Shameless plugs.
No,
plug.
Heard on Apple or Amazon.
Yep. And go check it out. If you haven't seen those movies and you are at all a horror fan, you will come back next week and tell us how happy you are. Listen, guys, Germany, we got to talk. So, United States, United Kingdom coming in, still UK. God, killing it for us. Canada coming in third. New Zealand coming in fourth. Strong fourth place. Boy, New Zealand's
Are these your subscribers?
These are
listeners.
These are our listeners. New Zealand is like, has you know, you fell back, but like you came in strong and you've stayed ahead. Because the next place is Australia. And, you know, and I was thinking,
they've been fighting back and forth. They've been going.
Well, but for a while, Australia was behind Germany. Germany solidly was in fourth place. Like, Germany was killing it. Now Germany has slipped to fifth place. So we love you, Germany. I am actually finding myself looking for German, Blood Red Sky. That's a German movie.
Guys, watch out for Greece. Because I'm very popular in Greece.
Okay.
Oh, okay. 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 Right. This Greek dude once, he's like, "You're huge in Greece." I'm like, "I gotta go there."
I'm just gonna move to Greece. Yeah. Sweden coming in right behind Germany. Turks and Caicos Islands staying strong. We love you, Turks and Caicos Islands. India.
I love that one so much.
Yeah, it's so weird to me. Yeah, India, Mexico, Poland, Netherlands, France, Puerto Rico, Brazil, Spain, Czech Republic, Ireland, Switzerland, Taiwan, the Philippines, Italy, Chile, Russia, and Finland. I could keep going. I know it drives Graham crazy when I keep going.
There's a lot of countries in the world.
But we do have a lot. What's number one? Well, the United States is number one, but UK comes in a close second with England in first place, Scotland in second place, and Wales in third place. The fact that people in Wales are listening to us makes me very happy. I love Wales. So,
They are our progenitors, so that makes
sense. Yes. And some great movies from Wales. Who's in the Underworld movies, and he's in Good Omens. What is the name of that actor? Why am I forgetting it?
Oh, fuck.
Matthew Rhys? Matthew Rhys is Welsh from the Americans.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Matthew Rhys is Welsh. Yep. You were in an episode.
And also the last episode of Columbo, by the way.
Oh, shit.
well, that's
that is interesting. That's an interesting little tidbit. I like it.
Sorry. It's Michael Sheen. And he is Welsh, and he is the first nonprofit actor. He has decided to go fully nonprofit, only make enough money to survive off of, and give the rest of the money that he makes acting away. That is
because he's already made enough.
I worked
with him on Prodigal Son, which was CBS, I think. What a great guy! What a great actor!
He's really a great actor. He's him on Good Omens was absolutely him and David Tennant together. John Hamm's in it, Benedict Cumberbatch, and you know, out of a Gaiman book. I mean, yeah, it's hard to make that bad. That was great. We do have Patreon. If you go to AGHP666 and sign up for our Patreon, we have everything from $1 to $20. You become a member of the Army of the Goddamned, which Graham will read right now.
We got Michael, Drew, Stephanie, Katie, Chris, Alan, Bacon Bits, Angela, Jasmine, Jason, Jake, Vivian, Ron, Kristen, Manny, Coleman, Ryan, Jared, Michelle, and Brandon.
Well,
Bacon Bits is a cat, by the way. So if you guys join the Army of the Goddamn, I'm telling you that right now, because if you join the Army of the Goddamn, you get to be in the army with Bacon Bits, and Bacon Bits fucking rules. Okay.
Yeah.
If you saw Bacon Bits's face, you'd be like, fuck yeah, I want to serve in the Army of the Goddamn right next to that cat.
You thought Bacon Bits was another person, you'd really want to serve with them.
True. Yeah, I don't want to be on the opposing side of Bacon Bits, to be honest.
Anyways, big shout out to Morbidly Beautiful, our podcast network, who carries our message to everybody. Please go check out their stuff. Jonas has a weekly article on their website. Please go check them out.
And, Wild Eye Wednesdays.
Yep. Talking about the rough stuff. The rough movies. The extreme movies.
The extreme ones from Wild Eye Releasing.
If you need any help, please reach out. We all need to do this together, and we all need for you to stay around. Horror fans, we got to love each other, and we're the only ones here going to do this. So stick around, reach out if you're struggling. We ain't got all the answers, but we got big ears, and I can also shut up. So take care of yourself, please. And until we see you again, please start some fires and break some glass. Thank you so much.